Stay tuned for The Cinema Clash, as Maryland-based critics Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl debate the merits of new releases, from the mainstream movies that Hannah tends to favor to obscure foreign films that Charlie likes to champion. It's free-flowing, unedited conversation with an occasional wine wager. Two very different perspectives, one entertaining podcast. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to The Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net.
I brought a beer tonight, and I had Hannah taste it before we started recording. And I don't know if that was a good thing or not, because it's hard to describe to you what her face scrunched up into and the smacking sound that she made.
Yeah, I thought perhaps you had, like, slipped me a urine sample or something.
See, you're not... Now I don't want to name the brewery this comes from. But we are drinking Victress. It's cranberry lime kettle sour.
It's a sour.
It says all women brewed.
Oh, sorry.
Way to go. Wait, so I'm not going to name the brewery now. You can look it up if you want to. But after that comment, there's no way I can name it. Can you match it with a film?
It's called Victress. And so my guess is that you probably are somehow putting it with Suicide Squad, in which case it would be a perfectly reasonable beer to me.
Yeah, I felt a bit of a stretch. It actually would go much better with Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
But since I wasn't really seeing anything today, and I couldn't match anything with Annette, and I couldn't match anything with 9 Days, I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of like a Harley Quinn kind of thing going on. So I shoved it in. But wow, you don't like it. I'm going to take
it's
it.
Just
you don't
a little,
like it.
You know, it's just not my thing with the sour.
It's bold.
It's a bold flavor, and I'm more of a pale ale kind of gal. And so this definitely has more of a soury kind of...
No, you're right. It's a sour beer. Tea. Absolutely.
It's
right.
A sour beer. So, you know, but you're a sour guy. So I guess it makes sense.
And I have sour taste in film. All right. We have a blockbuster, a superhero film, perhaps a super anti-hero film. Mm-hmm. This week, bat and lead off from DC Films. This is not Marvel. This is not Disney. This is not the Avengers. This is DC, which has a checkered past, a vague history of ups and downs, ebbs and flows when it comes to movies like this. I'm talking The Suicide Squad, not Suicide Squad. Don't confuse it from 2016. This is The Suicide Squad from Warner Brothers and on HBO Max. If you have HBO Max, you can watch it between now and September 5th, 30 days before it disappears. Or you can go to the theater in IMAX. Mm-hmm. This is a standalone sequel to Suicide Squad. You do not have to have seen that one that had Will Smith in it. And Harley Quinn is back. But it had most different anti-heroes than the new The Suicide Squad. It is R-rated. Rare for a superhero film, but it's James Gunn, and that's what he wanted to do. And that's what the fans thought the film deserved. And the critics don't seem to mind, since it comes in at a whopping 93%, written and directed by James Gunn. We've talked about him before, because he's from Marvel. He was temporarily fired from Disney after some old tweets surfaced, and they fired him off of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. He is known for 1 and 2 wonderful films. Mm-hmm. Love the Guardians of the Galaxy. He was temporarily fired, though, so Marvel has since hired him back, and he is currently, I believe, making Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Or 3? 4?
3?
I don't know what we're on.
I mean, they did pop up in the Avengers.
In the Avengers.
But this
movie
is their own
gotcha
film. Hannah, mm-hmm, now that Will Smith is gone, but kind of has been replaced someone similar.
Idris Elba.
And Harley is back from her. And you do not have seen Birds of Prey. It's like it doesn't even exist in this film. That's its own standalone thing. So there's really not a lot of prerequisites coming in here. And maybe a whole new cast of supporting characters. Hannah, this is usually not your kind of thing. Where are you coming in on what's going on with The Suicide Squad?
Well, I like The Suicide Squad way more than Suicide Squad from 2016. That one did nothing for me other than Harley Quinn. She was the standout breakout character in the first one. And I think she is, again, Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn is again the standout character in this one. Although I do like more the others that she is surrounded by and that she is teamed with in this one. The fact that it is James Gunn who did Guardians of the Galaxy, I think one of the other reasons that I like the vibe of this one and the dynamic between these super villain types who are now having to try and be heroes for 2 hours is that it has that Marvel-esque kind of sensibility to it, more so than the previous Suicide Squad. And so that combined with just a very interesting, quirky cast of characters. You mentioned Will Smith was gone, but you have Idris Elba now. And so you can't go too wrong with a little extra Idris Elba in your film. There's the whole cast. I mean, it's got they don't all survive for very long, but you've got Idris Elba as Bloodsport, John Cena as this peacemaker character. You've got Captain Boomerang, Ratcatcher. Pete Davidson shows up as this guy Blackguard, and Sylvester Stallone is in a shark suit, and there's a weasel, and Nathan Fillion as TDK, which is like the detachable kid. And so you've got just a slew of really interesting, fun, kind of quirky villain types. And so I did appreciate, oh, and there was like Polka Dot Guy. And it was just a very entertaining sort of set of people. However, a lot of violence, a lot of blood splatter. It absolutely tested my threshold for that kind of stuff in a film. I still prefer a superhero film that actually has superheroes in it doing super heroic things, and a lot fewer rats. There are a lot of rats in this movie. But aside from that, I went in with extremely low expectations, and I was pleasantly surprised, which I think accounts for your like 93% Rotten Tomatoes.
This has received so much better than 2016's Suicide Squad, which made a ton of money. It still made like $1 billion, but people made fun of it. People mocked it. It actually wasn't very good. Jared Leto's portrayal of Joker kind of fell flat. No one liked the villain, Cara Delevingne. So they went ahead and fast-tracked a sequel because it made so much money. So make another one, and maybe that'll make much money. People just come to see this because it doesn't matter if it's good or not. So they rehired David Ayer. He was the original director, and he ended up leaving. He wanted to go do something called Gotham City Sirens. That looks like it's that Harley Quinn Band of Females. And then they went ahead and hired Gavin O'Connor. He did Miracle and The Accountant, and his treatment, his story, was actually very similar to Birds of Prey. And when they went ahead and made that, he left to go be with your boy Ben Affleck and do The Way Back. I remember you really liked that film.
I did like that.
And that's when they brought on James Gunn. They said, James, you can do anything you want to in the DCEU. That's the DC Comics Expanded Universe, Extended Universe. And he wanted to make the next Suicide Squad sequel. And that, you know, they said, you can remake it, you can reboot it, do whatever. He's like, no, I'll stay in the same universe. I'll just do a standalone sequel. And I laughed. I laughed because things like Polka Dot Man and Ratcatcher 2, you're supposed to laugh at. And whatever Peter Capaldi's doing as Gavis Greaves, you're supposed to laugh at. And you're supposed to laugh at King Shark, voiced by Sylvester Stallone. He's kind of like the Groot character. People, you know, Kevin Smith always talked about he would love to see someone attempt King Shark because he just didn't think it would be possible to do it. And I don't know if, I guess it works. He's funny. But, you know, he's just shoehorned in. The biggest new arrival, yes, Harley Quinn is in it. She's in it less than the original film. She's got less to do. She's just kind of along for the ride. She does have her scenes, yes, but she's in it less than she was in the original film. The biggest new arrival is John Cena. John Cena as Peacemaker. And James Gunn's doing something very interesting here. I think he's got a message. He's talking about a very particular slice of American citizenry who think loyalty to the flag and patriotism trumps everything. It doesn't matter. He says, I love peace. I'd do anything for peace. I would kill as many men, women, and children as it took to get peace. Yeah. meaning he'll never have peace. He just wants to kill men, women, and children. He's a very conflicted character. You laugh at him, but you're like, oh, you know, there's a deeper message here. It's not brave enough to explore that message, not when he's standing next to Sylvester the King Shark and Starro the Conqueror. Wait till you get a load of Starro the Conqueror. But Peacemaker is semi-fascinating, and we're going to see him again. He's coming back on a spin-off television series, which we will see in January of 2022. Ah. 8 episodes on HBO Max, The Origins of Peacemaker.
Ah, interesting.
So I'm personally looking forward to seeing what's going on with this guy.
Yeah, no, and John Cena, you know, he's interesting to watch. I think there's conflict going on with all of these characters, and the strange thing to me that always has been the strangest thing with Suicide Squad and with trying to grasp the concept of let's take all these cons who've done all these really bad things and sort of dangle, you know, some 10 years off their sentences or immunity or whatever to participate in some sort of black ops, totally off the books operation to do something to help save the world. And will they, you know, can they work together to achieve this goal? And Viola Davis is back as sort of the government intelligence agent who is running this operation. And she is, she's not a nice lady. She will blackmail them and hold all kinds of things over their heads to get them to cooperate. And basically their lives are sort of also at stake when they go on these missions, which are in essence suicide missions. Like, there's such a small chance that they're given such a small chance to succeed, and that's why they are known as the Suicide Squad. For those who are not aware of that, although I do think that most people who go see the Suicide Squad will be those Comic-Con types and the ones that we're going to go see Suicide Squad in 2016, no matter what. Then I think the good thing about the Suicide Squad is that if you do just happen to go see it, you're actually going to like it better than the previous one. And so that's a good thing. But you still have to be into the genre to want to go see this film.
You like the Suicide Squad better than I did. I like the genre. I'm into the genre. I'm just tired. I'm tired. Even when it started, I was like, great, James Gunn. I know he's fresher than most. He's like on the Taika Waititi scale, and I say that because he may pop up in this film. I'm just tired of, God, I know I'm in for 2 hours of quirk and one-liners, and yes, there'll be surprises, but I was not thrilled for another one, and I know 8 more are coming down the pike, and I don't care.
No, I mean, I could have just as easily skipped it, but I went more out of curiosity. It is not my favored type of superhero flick. All I'm saying, I didn't love it. I'm just saying I liked it way more than I liked the Suicide Squad in 2016. And so that was a relief to me. And I did not stay through the end credits, but luckily because it is on HBO Max, I found out afterwards that there was a little bonus scene, so just be sure that if you do watch it either in the theater or on HBO Max, that you let those credits run all the way through to the end, because there will be a little extra teaser for you that is kind of a predictor of things to come.
I was much more interested to see our next film, because I knew I'd never seen anything like it before, and I've seen 13 and a half versions of the Suicide Squad, just done a little differently. I've never seen anything like it.
No one has.
I was really anticipating it because I love the director, Leos Carax. I remember him from 2012. He blew up the Cannes Film Festival and then cinemaphiles like me with a film called Holy Motors. And if you've ever seen that, you know what I'm talking about. It's just so indescribable. I think it was one of my favorite films of that year. I can't even describe it because it's just, it's so off the wall and unique and creative. I've never seen anything like it before. So like, oh, a new Carax film? Line it up. And it opened this year's Cannes Film Festival and it won Best Director for Leos Carax. He didn't write it. It's not his story. It's from Sparks. the French pop rock long-running band Ron and Russell Mayall. They even had their own documentary early this year from Edgar Wright, The Sparks Brothers. I did not see that, but I watched the trailer earlier today and actually really might want to check that out. Annette is divisive. Annette is polarizing. A.O. Scott in the New York Times extolled it, loved it. Bravery, bold, gorgeous, see it. Anne Hornaday in the Washington Post hated it. Pretentious. Has nothing to say. Don't like any of the characters, but gorgeous.
But weird. It's weird. I mean, that's all I could say.
Therefore, where do you think I come in?
I know. So you come in higher than I do on this one for sure, because I love, you saw it for the director. I saw it for the cast. I'm like, ooh, Adam Driver, you know, can do no wrong, really. He's just always very fully committed to whatever character he's going to play. Marion Cotillard, you know, also, I'm like, okay. And music, I was told there's going to be music in this.
There's
a
little bit of music in this.
Because,
why?
So Adam Driver plays this LA-based comedian, very off-the-wall, edgy.
Henry McHenry, my new favorite character name, by the way.
Henry McHenry. And he ends up falling in love and getting married to this opera star, played by Marion Cotillard, and so she sings, he sings. I don't know if you remember at the end of Marriage Story, he sang...
Sondheim's Being Alive.
Yes. So he can carry a tune, but oh my God, this is like, okay, let's sing when we're on a motorcycle. Let's sing when we're...
What are they doing?
Doing something in bed.
What are they doing?
They are doing it, and it's like, okay, this is kind of weird for a singing.
There's 5% dialogue in this film, and there's 95% singing dialogue.
And the thing is, I was so excited because I love the first 2 minutes of this film because it's basically saying, we're about to deliver you this movie.
Oh, there's an overture.
There's an overture to this film where they come out singing, and it's this very well choreographed.
So may we start.
Sort of tracking, one single tracking
it is,
shot.
It looks like a single take.
And they're singing, may we start, which is a total earworm, which I actually.
And it's nothing to do with the film. They're actually saying, pay attention, Hannah, you're about to see something here.
And it's like, pay attention because you might have loved this first 2 minutes, but pay attention because we're about to take you down a completely, completely different road. And it is a weird road. And so Annette is the name of the child that they become this big celebrity couple, but obviously there's issues going on. And they end up having this child, Annette. Now, I don't know if Annette is it a marionette? Is it a puppet? Is it a plastic doll? That plays the daughter, Annette, who also is some sort of protege and has some special skills. But suddenly you go from weird to weirder.
I love everything about what you're saying.
I know. And so I can understand why this would be so divisive, because it's just weird and it's odd. And I still, after a week and a half, cannot process what I really think of it, other than to just be wanting to maybe watch that first 2 minutes again, because to me that was the most entertaining of this film. It's so off the wall that it's more of a Charlie movie than a Hannah movie. It's certainly not a mainstream movie, but you'd think with Adam Driver and with Marion and with the music element that it would be mainstream and hearing about it coming out of Cannes, but no, it's not mainstream at all.
The only reason this movie got made is because of Adam Driver. He latched on early, like 2016, when he heard about the story and read the script, and they just couldn't get funding. So a lot of people think So May We Start is like, hey, we've now overcome 5-6 years of obstacles. No money, COVID, the whole thing. So may we start now. And it was originally supposed to be for Rooney Mara. Then it was supposed to be for Michelle Williams. Mm-hmm. And finally, just because of schedules or it just took forever to get made, it ended up with Marion Cotillard, which is fine. Oscar winner. The woman can sing.
Yes.
Adam Driver can sing. He's just got a very interesting boundary-limited register. And I wonder, I mean, people might take some issues with that on his range. But the man can sing, especially a song early on called We Are So Much In Love. That was a good tune. That's a catchy tune. I'm in the middle of the road. I wanted to love it. I wanted so desperately to love everything about this. And it's just so much of a Shakespearean tragedy to me. The movie, I love the first half. I didn't love the second half. It takes a turn. I can't tell you what it is. But the second half is completely different than the first half. It's a Shakespearean tragedy. The story is just meh. It's not involving. I actually got kind of bored by the end. I'm like, oh, this is where we're going with this. This is not original. What they're doing is original. What they're doing is creative. They're singing at me. But he just becomes this, you know, it's a tale of the consequences of hardcore love and romance and what happens when you become a parent.
And I think there's some mental illness in there at play, too. So it's not just strictly...
Yet Annette is still 75% on the tomato meter. It's a fresh tomato.
But again, it's a fresh tomato of the people, 75% of the people who actually have seen it. And it's, the fact that it won, it's sure, give it best director at Cannes because it's French arty film. So that's...
It's not in French, though. So identify with it, folks. It's completely in English. It's Carax's first English film.
Absolutely. But it's, I would say it's a French artsy sensibility.
And it takes place in, like, Santa Monica.
LA, so. Yeah. So it's just... Again, I haven't been able to fully process it, so I can't. There are people that will absolutely embrace what he's going for, and it's certainly different.
Yeah, isn't it great? There's nothing of the Suicide Squad. It's something completely different. How refreshing is that?
Well,
it's not as mainstream as Pig.
No, but it makes Pig look completely mainstream. So it's apples and oranges though. Like you cannot even put them on the same map. They are just so different. And it's a film for the cinephile like you.
But let's talk about the film I actually enjoyed the most this week. And it's called 9 Days from first time feature film writer, director, Edson Oda, starring Winston Duke. You know, Winston Duke, because you saw Black Panther. He was in M'Baku. He was also in Us. I believe he was the father the other father in, well, I guess both fathers, yeah, in Us. Here he's Will. Hannah, Will lives in a house, and he's got a lot of file cabinets, kind of an analog kind of guy, and he's conducting interviews. What is Will interviewing for?
Well, Will is interviewing for a vacancy to be a... newborn soul on Earth, I believe. he's not just living in a house with file cabinets. He's in this living room, sitting on his couch, looking at a wall of TV monitors that you come to realize are just sort of showing point of view perspectives of just a whole bunch of people on Earth going about their daily lives. And he just is monitoring all of these daily interactions. And so we see all of a sudden that Will is very disturbed by a life that ended very suddenly. And it was somebody that was like a violin protege. And so when one life ends, it opens up a vacancy for another one. And so he ends up in this remote outpost where his house is, getting a bunch of knocks on the door from these random people that are all applying for the job of filling this one vacancy to be a soul, for their soul to be, I guess, like in a newborn baby or something.
No pressure.
And the rest, so one will make it through the 9 days of testing and the interview process, and the rest will just end up in oblivion. And that's it. And so this was one where I watched it and I went, this is such a Charlie movie, but in a good way. One of those.
What do you mean in a good way? It's always in a good way.
No. In a way that I knew I would like to, but that we would like it for very different reasons.
You like a film and I like a film. Therefore, the film must be
pretty interesting and pretty good. And 9 days, if I remember correctly, I actually requested 9 days. I watched it and I said, Charlie, you got to watch this one. So you watched it courtesy of my actually saying.
Because we're looking out for each other. Sometimes I see a sack of crap and I'm like, Hannah, you got to watch this because this is your movie.
And then here I watch something that really is unlike Annette. I'm going, this was very surprising because this is one of those ones that is very much a contemplative, arty kind of film that also I think would have some mainstream appeal because it's very thought-provoking. The cast of characters are very interesting, very unique, and it pulls on themes from like The Truman Show, which I think goes back to like 1998, and Soul, the animated film that just won Best Picture Animated Film at the Oscars. And so this to me was a dramatic version, I would suppose, of if you took a mashup of those two films and turned it into sort of this contemplative indie, then you end up with 9 Days. But yeah, it's very interesting, very quiet, and just Winston Duke is great, and all the other characters that sort of come in to interview for this job and talk about anybody who's eliminated gets an opportunity to kind of talk about what their very last, you know, what would you do? The idea is, what would you want to do if you knew you only had a very, very limited time left in existence, in any kind of existence? And so this is sort of an existential film, yet accessible in its own way.
Take note, listeners. Hannah here is praising a film she just called an existential film. She doesn't normally do that. And the fact that she is and that I'm raving this should really tell you something about 9 Days, which is what happens when a philosophy major watches Pixar's Soul. But even this was probably written before Soul. This mm-hmm. was premiered, this premiered at Sundance 2020, not even 2021. So that's how much COVID delayed this was. It explained a lot when I saw who one of the executive producers was, Spike Jonze. Remember the man behind Being John Malkovich, Adaptation, Her. This is in the same wheelhouse. I really enjoyed some of the cast of characters who were interviewing to become a new person. The main one is probably Emma, played by Zazie Beetz. Tony Hale shows up. Me and my son have been watching Tony Hale the last 6 weeks or so on Disney Plus. He's in the mysterious Benedict Society, a wonderful television show, by the way. He's got his own. You can tell what kind of person he would be. Bill Skarsgård shows up, and you're like, wait, where have I seen him? He's actually the guy behind the clown face in It. You can tell what kind of person he would be. Can't really tell what kind of person Emma would be. She's the wild card. And Will, he's got his right-hand man, Kaio, played by Benedict Wong, who's he had a big bit. He's an Avenger. He's not an Avenger, but he's like a hang around with
like
Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange's sort of.
So I would actually, I might, probably will put Winston Duke on my top 5 actors. He doesn't have, you know, he's not running around screaming. He's actually very calm, but he's a very sad, something happened to this guy kind of calm. And then at the end, he does actually have a scene where he can stretch. Some might accuse him of overacting on that one, but I just think, no, actually,
it's intentional.
There's something, there's a reason he's doing that.
Yeah.
86% on the tomato meter. So actually right in the middle of the 3 films we're talking about today, which are all Fresh Tomatoes. But folks, this is leagues, fathoms above The Suicide Squad. I can't believe, like, we even talk about him in the same breath. Hannah is praising an existential film here, people. How rare is that?
I know, and that was even before I started drinking this beer. So yes, no, and it's just the whole, each individual, and anybody who's been through the job interview process can relate. It's just fascinating that you're taking what is sort of a mundane, kind of very humanistic experience and placing it into this particular storyline, because they basically, Kaio and Will are the strangest HR department in the history of humankind. And so just to see them try and figure out who is the best candidate when there is no real right or wrong answer to some of these tests, it's you know, the only question that's missing is, where do you see yourself in 5 years? That would have been pretty funny to interject. But
I hate that question. It's right up there with, what's your greatest weakness?
Exactly.
Interviewing, sir.
Yes, but the pressure that that each of these candidates feel, because they all want this so badly. It's like, you really, really want this job. And you're put next to living day in and day out with your chief competitors, it's just a very, very engrossing film. It had me really from beginning to end. I think this one right now is only in theaters, which is a shame. I hope it gets out there a little further and is discoverable.
All right, you also caught. I didn't because I'm saving it to watch with my kid. But you caught up with a new Netflix animated film called Vivo. What's going on with Vivo?
Yeah, I didn't watch Vivo like with 100% concentration. I really just wanted to know what it was and whether or not it was something that we could sort of safely send the family crowd to. And it is. It's a Lin-Manuel Miranda film. So Lin-Manuel Miranda
plays. I just saw
plays,
one of those. Exactly. He was in the Heights somewhere.
Yes, he was in the Heights playing Hamilton. He is this animated character that is a kinkajou. And I think everybody's going to want a pet kinkajou now, which is some sort of mammal from the rainforest, part of some honey bear breed, I don't know, something like that. But a cute little animated thing. And the music is great. And that's really why anybody would potentially kind of sit through this whole thing. The story's fine. It's a pretty simplistic one. Basically, you have this music-loving kinkajou that is owned by this old guy in Cuba named Andres, played by Juan de Marcos. And Andres has written this song that's been kept away for years and years and years. It was written for the love of his life, who went off to America, to Miami, and became a very famous singer. And as soon as that character opened her mouth, playing Marta, I knew it was Gloria Estefan. I'm like, that is so identifiable as Gloria Estefan singing. And so it is a film that just has, it's another one that has that Latin beat to it. Lin-Manuel Miranda does interject some of his sort of rapid fire rap into it. It's got sweet characters. It's just harmless. Has good music, has a lot of representation, themes about second chances and friendship and love and family and all that kind of stuff. And of course, somebody always dies to launch these films, you know, the storylines. But once you get beyond that, it's colorful, it's got good music, and it's PG. And so if you need a PG family-friendly Netflix film and you like Lin-Manuel Miranda, you can't go too wrong with Vivo.
Better or worse than the other recent animated film we saw on Disney Plus, Luca.
Luca's better. Luca's definitely. I think Luca in total was better. This one has the music's better in Vivo, but Luca's story, I think, was a little more. It was just stronger. So I think it was just a stronger kind of animated film. But Vivo is perfectly good.
All right, let's hop over to what we've been watching on television, and I caught up with episode 2 of Watch the Sound with Mark Ronson, a docuseries that I latched on to far stronger than you did. In fact, I'm pretty sure you didn't watch this episode.
I watched 5 minutes of the episode.
And this one is on, remember episode 1 was on auto-tune? This one's on sampling, and this one should have been episode 1. This one is so much better than the auto-tune episode, 100% more relatable. We've got Questlove, we've got the two surviving Beastie Boys, Mike D and Ad Rock, talking about Paul's Boutique. We've got Paul McCartney, obviously.
Paul McCartney back.
Obviously from the same interview, but now he's talking about how they did that sound on Strawberry Fields Forever on the Mellotron, how they sampled the flutes, the bird samples on Tomorrow Never Knows. Gangstar, DJ Premier, DJ Premier and Questlove and Mark Ronson start talking about crate digging. I go crate digging on the weekends. You can find me at the Record Exchange in Silver Spring crate digging. I totally latched on to episode 2, loved everything about it. This docuseries is growing on me.
It's for you. It's for audiophiles. It's for anybody who has their vinyl, their wall of vinyl, like I'm looking at right now, that you have, and who appreciates just sort of that, sort of knowing more behind the music, literally, of what's going into the making of music of different kinds. So I knew that this was definitely a series that you were more likely to latch onto. So I tapped into a little bit for a few minutes just to see like how the whole series was playing out in terms of how they were sort of picking that one topic to focus on for each half hour. And so I really, sampling to me just doesn't, I don't really care. So it was harder to get into that particular half hour. So, to me, I probably won't watch any more of them unless there's a particular topic that just jumps out at me or guest on one of them. But yes, if you are an audiophile, then absolutely this is a series that really was made for you.
A new television show begins this week on Apple TV+. You can watch the first two episodes of Mr. Corman, and it stars your boy, writer, director, creator, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And he wrote his alter ego. Joseph Gordon is Josh Corman. It is Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Because he said, this is a what-if scenario. What if I was not cast as the boy on Third Rock from the Sun? What if I was not the boy on Angels in the Outfield? He's got some neuroses. He's exploring a big what-if. He may very well be Mr. Corman teaching fifth grade right now in Los Angeles. COVID actually moved the shoot to New Zealand, so we're actually not watching Los Angeles. We're watching wow. New Zealand. But this is a guy who's got a roommate, lives in a crappy apartment, teaches fifth grade, and he's got anxiety. And just, he's not, you know, he's financially strained. He's not poor, but he's strained. They don't pay fifth grade teachers a lot of money. Deborah Winger shows up as his mom.
Wow.
Here's another reason I thought you would like to watch this. And there's just, I didn't latch on to it great, though. I mean, if he tries to make it like a Seinfeld, like a Curb Your Enthusiasm, these awkward situations where he wants you to laugh, but you're just not laughing. Like, yeah. He goes to a pay what you can class, and he gets into it with the person at the folding, like, what do people pay? I can't tell you that, sir. But really, like a 5 or 20, I can't tell you that, sir. And then he says that he was overcharged. It's exactly like something Larry David would do. But it's not. This is not a funny show,
right.
Even though he thinks it's a drama comedy. It's a drama.
Yeah.
Did you watch this,
no,
by the way?
No, I have not watched it. And I do love Joseph Gordon-Levitt. So I was tempted. I just didn't have time. And then I started seeing people whose opinions I generally follow and respect. Nobody liked it. And so, you know, it's one thing when you're hearing rave reviews about something and somebody tells you, you have to watch this. Oh, you'll love this. You'll love this. It's got your boy, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
It's got your boy.
But nobody has said that.
You're saying it's not Ted Lasso.
It's not Ted Lasso. I can just keep watching more and more Ted Lasso.
Can you even watch episode 3, Led Tasso? We met Led Tasso this week.
Is it only episode 3? Mm. yes. No, I love everything about Ted Lasso this season. And so, yes, this... this one was Do the Rightest Thing.
Yeah, so it's got yes. Sam going against their corporate sponsor, and it's yeah. got Led Tasso.
Led Tasso, and it's got
it's got the girl.
The girl that's shadowing her godmother.
There was not a lot of Roy Kent in
no.
this episode. There was not a lot of Keeley. This is Jamie Tart kind of
yes.
trying to reintegrate with the team. This is Rebecca, the owner, kind
yes,
of
and her goddaughter,
working with her 13-year-old
yeah.
goddaughter. And this is Ted Lasso.
Trying to be me.
it turns into a man called Led Tasso.
And you don't want
it.
And you don't want it. It's like the Hulk, but
it's
you
not,
know.
And that wasn't that great,
no,
actually.
No, I mean,
part.
It's just, it was obviously just a means to an end. But the fascinating thing is that Ted Lasso is sort of like the least interesting character, like his stuff is very minor in many of these storylines. And so he's definitely more of a supporting character to me in some of these episodes.
He stepped back a little bit from season
yeah.
one.
Yeah. And so he's letting, it is giving all these other characters even more of a chance to shine and to have their character, you know, grow and develop and they're all still just, they knock it out of the park every time. And so, yes, Do the Rightest Thing, episode 3. If you haven't seen it yet, that's your latest offering from Ted Lasso season 2.
And you can also watch the penultimate episode of Schmigadoon. She was in the opening credits. I was wondering when she was going to show up. And there's Jane Krakowski. She's playing the Countess from The Sound of Music.
I love this. I mean, it's just, she's so spot on. And if you've seen The Sound of Music as many times as I have, and you know every line of dialogue, and you know every ounce of each of these characters, then to see Jane's portrayal is absolutely hysterical. And I think Schmigadoon was one of those ones that got better as the episodes roll along. And so this was the penultimate, and I can guarantee you want to see this one, because then the ultimate one next week is just ties everything up so nicely. And so it's just Schmigadoon continues to just be that fun standout 6-part series that that is worth watching.
Kristen Chenoweth finally gets her song, and I am shocked. I'm shocked that they can actually tie this up all together in just 27 more minutes.
I know.
Blows my mind. I can't see where this is going. I can't believe. Well, I can see where it's all going. I know how they're going to end it, but I can't believe they can do it in 27 minutes.
They can. It's very impressive, and that's why they're just sort of building it very, you know, the building blocks have all been put into place over the past 5 episodes, and the only one that I'm disappointed, I think Martin Short ever came back as the leprechaun.
I figured I'm guessing I would see him one more time on their way out.
I'm trying to remember. I'm saying I don't remember.
You didn't go ahead and watch.
So I will need to, I will actually need to rewatch.
He has not come back since episode 1.
Yeah, but it's fun. And then finally, also, I will just say Pig is going to be, is out now on streaming services. So you can rent or buy that one.
Heck yeah, go watch Pig. Heck yeah.
With Nicolas Cage. And the reason I bring that up, too, is because we had a special letter in our clash bag through our website. Charlie, you had thrown out a question, I believe, last week.
Because I said, while I was preaching that Pig was actually a mainstream film, I said nobody was going to watch both Pig and Last Letter from Your Lover.
Well, and we got a letter, an answer to that from a listener named Matt, who appreciated the fact that we have our two different viewpoints. And he said, you can watch both and like both. He said that he is more of a Pig type of fan, but that his wife would want to watch something like Last Letter from Your Lover.
Exactly. So forgettable, and you can't remember.
No, and he said that you could appreciate, you could watch and like both of those, and that it's good to know that you can watch something with somebody else who might appreciate it and not hate it. And that's what I like to be able to point out is that, but I do think both of them, maybe he and his wife can watch 9 days.
Actually, I agree with you, but I was going to say, Matt, I double dog dare you for you and your wife to sit down one night and watch Annette.
That's right. So, and we do like getting the mail, so feel free to reach out to us. You can go to our website, thecinemaclash.com, and find our contact there, and we do read them. And we do appreciate the getting those responses. Yeah. But yeah, Annette, weird.
Yeah, I don't really want to rehash it all, but just remember The Suicide Squad. You know if you're going to watch it or not. I'm just bored of it. Annette, hey, I love the adventure, dude. Test me, challenge me. I'm up for the adventure. And 9 days is where it's at. You got to watch 9 days.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And of course, Schmigadoon and Ted Lasso. We've got to keep watching those.
All right. Well, thank you very much for listening to this episode of The Cinema Clash. I'm Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
The Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl is heard twice each weekend at 5:15 on Saturday and 12:15 on Sunday afternoon. Join us again next time for The Cinema Clash.